When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. The Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back in the rugby dungeon again after the blistering start to a Premiership season and all sorts of other rugby to talk about, which we will do. We will do in the rugby dungeon. I will be. I'm Tim. That's JB.
Hello, Tim.
So let's recap where Phil is right now.
I don't actually know. This came out of the blue to me. He just said he's gone to a cottage with no running water. And no electricity. Did he say no electricity?
Yeah. He said, so Phil is in deepest, darkest Devon somewhere.
It sounds like the start of, you know, a man is wronged and then he sets up his camp in an abandoned cottage somewhere, which he has on the sly in case this happens, full of weapons and whatnot. and you then halfway That's through it. The film, you realise he's ex-special forces.
Phil's a prepper.
Yeah, oh, you know what? It wouldn't surprise me.
Phil knows that something's happening. The end of the world is coming.
Yeah, the end is nigh.
Anyway, yeah, he's in a cottage in Devon. I mean, I'm presuming with his family and not just with his arsenal of weapons and tinned food.
Exactly.
And there is no mains. There is no running water. There is no plump sewage.
I've been to Devon. It's not that remote. It's not like it's North Wales or something.
No, it's weird. Anyway, there was a lot. And it doesn't have any signal either. So we are going to fill the void, however, with a special guest very soon who will bring the required amount of considered thought and expertise that you always get from Phil. Don't worry about that. We're not going to leave you hanging on that front.
Exactly. So the Premiership's back.
I know. It's good, isn't it?
So nice. It's so nice. Just having something to look forward to on Friday. I was driving to Wigan this weekend and Talk H were playing. We won a third game. The third game on the bounce, just saying. But I just love these rugby weekends. I love them so much. Nights are drawing in. I've forgotten how much I loved rugby and how much I love the Premiership in particular. There's just so much drama. Every weekend there's so much drama.
Yeah. And given we've got the now effectively ring-fenced league, There was a point about half an hour into the game on Friday night between Bristol and Saracens where I thought, no. If we're going to have ring fence league, let's not have this, lads. And I suppose let's start there because...
Go on. I'm interested. Where are you going with this?
It was quite a negative spectacle. I mean, I'd say overall, the rugby this weekend, I'm not being negative at all. I'm delighted it's back and it was brilliant and there was some great rugby and some really good tries. But that wasn't... Bristol weren't Bristol.
Bristol, right, okay. So, I'm heartbroken that you'd say this. I thought this was absolutely awesome. What an opener.
Yeah, it was great.
So, you've got the team which consider themselves to be wronged through the medium of the Dyson report and all the rest of it. They've returned. All of their players are back from one-year deals away in Japan and Wales and wherever they've gone. They're still not the force they are. And they're shorn of all of their internationals. Meanwhile, on the other side, you've got the perennial underachievers, Bristol. And they are going to come out firing because of what happened to them last year in a historic semi-final when they threw away a lead. And that was last year was their title. If it's going to happen, it was their title. They've also announced, just on a side issue, Pat Lamb's got a new five-year deal. I am convinced this is...
More than 5 years, isn't it? It's 2028.
Oh, is it?
It runs out.
Maybe it is more than 5 years then. I understood it's 5 years, but maybe it runs out in 2028.
It might be a five-year extension.
Oh, could well be, yeah.
Maybe.
Well,
I might have read it wrong. It might have been said 2026 and I need glasses.
But... Hear me now, believe me later. this is the zenith of Pat Lam. This is like the height of Rome. Yes, it'll go on for a long time more, and it might even be successful. But this is the absolute pinnacle of his career right now. He is at the height of his powers. So not winning last year is a problem. He better win this year. And I tell you what, judged on this performance, I don't think they will. I don't think they've been found out because they've got too much class for that. But what Saracens did to them this weekend was absolutely brutal.
You've got to credit Saracens massively as well.
Oh, absolutely.
It was brilliant because if you look at the names that Saracens didn't have.
Yeah.
All of the Lions guys, some big names, and they came to play.
And I looked through their team sheet. I was like, this is Bristol by 10. All day long, this is Bristol by 10. And the opening 10 minutes suggested as well, Bristol by 10. And I think the arrow to the heart for Bristol was that Billy Vanapola turnover right in the corner. And then I think Bristol just realised, this is a fight. This is a fight. And for some unknown reason, this is a big problem that Bristol have. I can't really put my finger on why they do it. But when they're in real difficulty, they seem to mimic the team they're facing. So when they're just open and free-flowing, they play like Bristol. But when they come up against it, I'll give you an example. Sale. They played Sale and they tried to beat up Sale. Who do you think you're kidding? You can't do it. They came up against Harlequins. They started to play open, unstructured rugby like Harlequins do. Can't do it. And they tried to outkick and out-system Saracens. What were they thinking? They've got a huge strategic problem, I think.
I'm just thinking, is it... That must be by design. They must be executing the game plan. Pat Lam never says on occasions like this, we got the game plan completely wrong, does he?
No. I don't know what happens to them. I wonder if it's like they want to prove a point of some sort.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is it
Definitely the Sale game. 100%. They went out there thinking they're going to beat up Sale and then we're going to show them how to play physical rugby. And they got hammered for it.
Yeah, that's not, and that isn't the kind of mindset of a champion team either.
No.
Like Rob Baxter, you know, albeit they didn't win this last time and they didn't look great by their standards at the weekend, but they've been to 6 Premiership finals in a row, won a couple of them, and the big part of that is they play the way they play and nothing changes. And
exactly.
They all stay on script.
Yeah. Bristol will be fine. They'll finish in the top 4. And anyone finishing in the top 4, as Harlequins showed last year, it's a complete lottery. Once you're there, it is a lottery. Because, you know, matchups, whatever happens on the day, so on and so forth. So they will get there. I do have big questions about their mentality, even after 1 week. But this is not really after week one. This is after the semi-finals. And I think they're going to be shaken by this. I would be shaken by it.
I've missed some of those Saracens guys. I've missed Nick Tompkins and...
Miss Billy. Billy was
Billy.
Immense.
He was immense.
You know, people compare, don't they, Nathan Hughes to Billy. And Nathan Hughes is a very, very good rugby player. They're not comparable. They're just not comparable. I mean, they might look similar in stature and weight and height and, you know, the occasional physical play. But Billy just grows into the game.
Well, yeah, because it's only a few percent and it seems to have taken Nathan Hughes from an absolute wrecking ball, just a couple of percent off, and he's much less effective.
Yeah, I think he goes missing, you know. I think once you match him physically, he started that game looking like the England number 8, and then Billy finished it absolutely nailed on as the England number 8. That's how I saw that going down.
Well, the weekend in general, I mean, our predictions all over the shop.
Terrible.
Got them all wrong. They were dreadful, but I take that as a positive for the Premiership.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I mean, I guess we could talk a little bit more about the positives of the Premiership. I am going to talk about the negatives, and not to do with the rugby per se, but there are a few things that, on opening weekend, you just don't need to be talking about this sort of stuff. So, number one is, on the opening weekend, do you think it's right that there are players missing? I know the Lions need a rest. I don't know how you square the circle. Maybe you give them a rest later on in the season or whatnot. Opening weekend, every team should be stacked. We should have Mario out there. We should have Faz out there. We should have absolutely everyone for opening weekend. Now, the crowd has showed up anyway because they've missed rugby as much as we have. But I just don't think it's a good look. It's not something we should be considering. We should just want to see the very best team that every single club can field on opening weekend.
What happens in a World Cup year generally? The World Cup tends to be in that September window, doesn't it?
And they miss players there.
So that's basically, a Lions year and a World Cup year, that's 50% of seasons, the best players miss the start.
And I just think it's one of these examples of the Premiership not getting its house in order. This is probably your biggest weekend outside of the finals or playoffs. This is it.
And anyone who, and again, you can debate the number of people that were turned onto rugby by that Lions series in South Africa, arguably very few. But if anyone was, and if anyone did discover rugby and had a newfound enthusiasm, you're right. You want to see Sam Simmons and Marcus Smith and Owen Farrell and the names that they will be familiar with from the biggest rugby moment since the World Cup.
So I wasn't aware of this, but apparently the Lions players make it pretty transparent as to who can play and who can't. So I think Sam Simmons can play before, say, Courtney Laws can play.
Yeah.
Because of the amount of time that they spent on the field and whatnot. So that would mean that I think Marcus Smith can come back sooner rather than later.
Yes.
I don't know where you find this information, but I've been told it is around.
That will be interesting. It's a good point. And when you think about World Cup years as well, in terms of marketing the sport, and again, this is jumping back to last week and the talk about the World 12s, this is why quality, not quantity, is the way to grow the sport. And, you know, right now there's NFL games going on, JB, which...
which we have not watched for 8 years now because of this. years or whatever it is.
I have it on a series record. I never go back and watch
it. No, I don't either. I want to. I really want to watch the NFL, but I just don't have the time.
I support New York Jets, so I'm not bothered about watching the
NFL. That's 10 years running. You've not been bothered about watching it since Mark Sanchez played.
What a playboy he was. What a boy.
So the negative.
So that's a negative. I'll take that. And that's an interesting point. Is there a way? But then you have a block of Premiership games, and then all of a sudden you've got Europe.
Yep.
And then it's just another meat grinder of a season. You've got autumn internationals coming up.
Well, I'll give you another negative. I'll give you another two. It took until opening weekend for Channel 5 to announce that they don't have Premiership highlights. I've tried to watch Sale Sharks now on the BT Sport app. Maybe it's available on the Prem Rugby site, I don't know. But I always watch my highlights on BT Sport. Sale Sharks is not there. There is no highlight show anymore on Channel 5. So you don't get the spectacle of Durders and Flatman every single weekend, which is a really good show. If you're a casual rugby fan, that is a cracking show. So where do we watch where do normal people watch the games? I don't think there's a free-to-air game this year.
Did you watch the Channel 5 highlights? Did you used to watch it?
I did, actually. Not always, because, of course, we're doing this.
It jumped around the schedule a little bit.
It did.
And it was quite often put quite late
but
at night.
At least it was there.
I mean, it was there, yeah.
And agreed. You can watch it on catch-up.
You're right.
You know, it was a good show. Why opening weekend? I mean, opening weekend it takes for the Premiership to decide it's not going to have a terrestrial TV partner. Madness. And this organisation... So
when you say you took for opening weekend to find out...
It was announced this weekend.
Oh, it was only announced that they weren't doing
it. Yeah, this weekend there was... Oh, by the way, there'll be no highlight show. What? That is madness.
Yeah.
And this
rather than that, you, and again, you don't... It's like when you're managing upwards to your boss, or you're trying to speak to a customer, you go with solutions, not problems. You go, by the way, if you want to catch the highlights, you can find them here at this time, because they will be available at premiershiprugby.com on a Monday from 11 a.m. whatever it is. Actually say what the solution is, not just say we don't have this.
Yeah,
that's very rugby, unfortunately.
I'll tell you something else very rugby. What are we on, like 6 months now since Darren Childs got fired, or whatever it was that happened to him, walked away, couldn't stomach it, whatever happened to him, happened. Still no CEO. So whoever's made this decision not to have a terrestrial partner for rugby, it's madness. I don't know if it's a CVC decision, don't know if it's the commercial director that's done this. I don't know. But, you know, come on, guys. It's opening weekend and you've not got it sorted.
It kind of ties in with the wrangling that apparently is going on between S4C and Amazon over... Welsh language coverage of the Autumn Internationals that they're saying no.
You're not
having it. I mean, you know how that might go down in Wales. I don't really know.
It'll go down great. Wow. Well, no, absolutely not. Crikey. Yeah. Oh, well. That broadcasting giant S4C will have to wave its immense power, I guess. Yeah, so I think I'll leave the negatives from there because I don't think anyone has downloaded this podcast to listen to me moan about the minutiae of the, well, the runnings of Premiership Rugby.
I was, just again, on a positive and on rugby in general, after watching Friday night, watching the Leicester Exeter game on Saturday afternoon and coming home and watching Newcastle Harlequins, I did that after going to mini rugby and it's just great to be around rugby clubs again. I absolutely love it. It was Trafford Metrovic we went to.
Did you?
And the Broughton Park boys, they're the local rivals.
Yeah.
That they went unbeaten last year. And, you know, I've started dabbling in, with a little bit of coaching. I'm taking no credit.
Oh, here we go.
The Broughton Park boys pulled off a fine win today in a little pre-season run out.
Oh, nice. What was the score?
It was good. Oh, it was like a training. It was a training game. Five tries to four, but...
It was good.
But it was just, I'm just saying, real positive, just being around a rugby club that's full of people and the sun was out, so there were people, but just people getting bacon balms and cups of coffee and parents. And it was just, I love rugby clubs. I might start going to one on a Saturday if I'm
yeah,
about.
Yeah, there you go. Trafford Metrovic's famous for who exactly?
Steve Diamond.
Correct. Mm-hmm. So that was, that was his original club. Nice club as well. Nicely situated. Nice little walk there. Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
You can walk over the little bank from the River Mersey.
Mm.
Yeah, it's nice. No, it's just I loved being around a rugby club again. And my weekend was just all rugby. So, did you play again?
Of course, I played. Yeah. Of course, I played. We went with not a scratch 15, but a 15 shorn of a few players. We had to call up four lads on debut, and they were all absolutely brilliant. So, and that is the sort of game which I love, because you get to give lads a chance, you get to see what they can do when the first team need them. And yeah, it might have been one of the best games that I've been involved with for the past five, 6 years.
That's high praise indeed.
Yeah.
Lovely job. Now, I just checking in, how are we getting on with the special guest?
Not ready just yet, but I'll let you know when he is.
The Phil replacement, the Phil fill-in.
Yes,
all right,
the fill-in.
The fill-in, yeah. While we're waiting, let's talk about one of the other big games of the weekend, one of the other live games, and Exeter Chiefs going to Leicester Tigers, which I think, did you predict Tigers to win, or did we all predict Chiefs to win this one? Anyway, whatever the case, I got it very much wrong, and Tigers were awesome.
They were, weren't they? I mean, I knew... Well, I didn't know. I thought they were going to be good this year. I really did. I think this sort of has validated that opinion. They were very good towards the back end of last year. I thought George Ford was absolutely awesome.
So good.
His short passing game is absolutely brilliant.
But they've now got in the centre...
Dan Kelly.
They've now got Dan Kelly, a sales
Dan Kelly.
A proper talent coming through, and Freddie Stewart as well. They've got just, when you look down the spine of that Leicester team, again, you've got a solid centre, rock solid fullback, a majestic fly half, really experienced scrum half. You've one of a number of gnarly South African number eights, workhorses in the second row. You've got real talent in the front row now. You're right. It looks a really, really good team.
Yeah. Now, it's not just the centre Dan Kelly that's from sale. You notice that Nick Dolly started.
Yeah, I did.
Which is awesome, because he has been around the houses for a few years now. I mean, I think when he first broke onto scene at sale, he didn't really have many first team, if any first team appearances, maybe a handful. But he was expected to be the next international. He's expected to be the next big thing. In fact, one of the reasons that they allowed Tommy Taylor to go is because they thought between him and Cam Neild, they've got it covered. And for whatever reason it is, didn't quite work out, went to Jersey, finds himself at Tigers, getting a start and looked really, really assured.
He really did. And yeah, it's very much a team in Steve Borthwick's mould and with Kevin Sinfield as well. Although, right, so at one point, Leicester were doing quite well, and they cut to a shot of Kevin Sinfield in the stand, and Ali Eakin, who was on comms, revealed that the key addition of Kevin Sinfield is
Northern Grit.
Oh, no, good. Actually, no, it wasn't that. It's more obvious than that. Defence coach stuff. What's he added?
Wolves. Tigers.
Tigers, that'd be a good one.
Yeah.
No, line speed.
Wow. What, hang on.
Or in French, what's that? Speed de la ligne.
How much does that cost?
A fair bit of money. And, well, fair play, whatever he's doing before, whoever was doing Kevin Sinfield's job obviously wasn't doing the obvious. Should have just said line speed.
Just line speed, boys. It's always line speed. Ever in doubt, line speed. Well, fair play to Kevin Sinfield, because I don't think they would have got that without him. On a positive point, Leicester Tigers, and I always say it because Borthwick says it, breakdown, defence and set piece, all were good. Their attack, particularly in the 22, was spot on. Absolutely spot on. They ripped Exeter to pieces.
Yeah, and in commentary, the guys were kind of saying, oh, it feels like Leicester are opening up. Maybe we're seeing a new side of it. And then they spoke to Brett Deacon after about half an hour, after Leicester had scored a couple of really good tries. And they said, so, you know, have you changed things up? Have you expanded your attack? And Brett Deacon said, no. All that's happened is we've had much better ball because we're winning the collisions. And so we're playing how we would play, how we want to play. We just had better ball to do it.
Yeah, and I said it earlier, but George Ford was magnificent. And sometimes it takes a game like this to remind you exactly how good he is. And you know, the way he looks off the long pass, and it's classic rugby league because that's obviously his background, but he just looks off the pass, delays that short pop, and it creates so much space for everyone else around him. Yeah. I mean, he's really...
It was a Marcus Smith-esque performance.
I think he does that even better than Marcus Smith, would you believe it?
Yeah. What George Ford does, he is the best at what he does.
So, Marcus Smith is the most important player for Tigers, and arguably, George Ford is the most important player for Harlequins.
Although Tommy Allen looks all right.
Oh, yeah. In today's game?
Yeah.
Anyone at Leicester Tigers... Who's going to go to the England squad? Because it's announced on Tuesday.
Freddie Stewart,
I agree.
Definitely. I don't think Kelly will.
What does he bring? I mean, he's very good around the breakdown. I know that much. He's a solid operator.
Oh, he's solid, yeah. He's definitely one for the future. But I think it would... George Martin? Stewart, probably George Martin still. I'm only saying that not because that's what I would select, but that's because what I think Eddie would... We'll pick.
Dan Cole
was really good.
Dan Cole was absolutely ace.
I'm going to say no, but Cole was excellent. I think that's possibly it.
Ben Youngs will be there. Oh, right?
George Ford, Freddie Stewart, Ben Youngs will still be there, yeah.
But if Ford goes, Smith can't go as well, can he?
Interesting.
How do you square the circle there?
Yeah. Well... Yes, he can still go. Smith can still go and will because he needs to. Remember, he kept just the two fly halves when Owen Farrell was a legit 10. I think Owen Farrell will be 12 now or will be considered more so as a 12.
Has to be, doesn't he? Just to get your best players in the squad.
Yeah, and so that helps. And also, Marcus Smith is a very different type of character to when Eddie Smith didn't have Sippers as a third choice 10.
Eddie Jones.
Eddie Jones didn't have Danny Cipriani as a third choice 10 when he had the option, and that raised eyebrows. But actually, I think that Marcus Smith's a different type of guy, and Marcus Smith wouldn't rock the boat if he wasn't picked.
So, do you want to know something interesting about Leicester Tigers?
Always.
Apparently, it's getting very intense there. Very, very intense. And
good intense.
That's a great question.
Because I don't know whether that's good or bad.
I think it's a double-edged sword. So, as I understand it, there is a Monday morning meeting. There's not. There is... Borthwick is doing Borthwick things, and he is an intense man, and he's pushing very, very hard. Some guys, I think, are starting to crack under the pressure, but it looks like other guys are starting to thrive. And here is my thought on that, which is, when you're in a salary cap, you can't just go out and buy the best players. So you need something else, don't you? You need some sort of culture, esprit de corps, something like that. And if the thing which Borthwick is looking for are super intense individuals that can handle that pressure, that might be a great screening method to make sure that's how he builds his team. And you can see it with other teams. They have, Exeter Chiefs have Rob Baxter's movement patterns, or there's a certain culture that runs through Bristol. Say, like, physically dominant guys. Yeah, and that might be the thing which they hold on to going forward.
Yeah, that's quite. And if you think about the military, for example, that's how you whittle down a load of potential Green Berets down to the absolute elite.
Exactly. And if that's the mindset might be more important than the physical ability. But if you had a bunch of boys that want to work that hard, you've got a hell of a team. So I'm looking forward to seeing. I mean, the alternative to that is everyone cracks and, there's splintering and yada, 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 which is not good. But, we said last week when we're going through who would be good and who wouldn't be, I think we were all unanimous on Leicester Tigers being very good.
Yeah. They've got an identity and a lot of their fundamentals are there. And the way that Borthwick has turned over a lot of players,
yeah,
but now has a really talented core.
Yeah, it's like the Premier League is better when Manchester United's good, the NFL is better when the Raiders are good, Premier Rugby is better when Leicester Tigers are good, and I hope that Leicester Tigers are good.
As for Exeter, Rob Baxter wasn't getting carried away, nor should he, I don't think. They were not up to their normal standards. They are missing a few key players. They were a bit rusty. Rob Baxter said he thinks it might be they were undercooked deliberately. Well, obviously he wanted them to be better, but they were undercooked. They didn't play as many preseason games as they normally would because he was conscious that they'd had a couple of very big years. And so I think he's quite comfortable building slowly within the season, which is quite a brave and bold thing to do. But if there's one man I would trust to know how to arrive at the right part of the season in the right place,
yeah, I'm not.
It'd be Rob Baxter.
I'm not telling Rob Baxter how to run his team. So, yeah, if that's what he thinks, it's good enough for me.
You suddenly saw, though, when there's no Ewers, Skinner, Vermeulen, Simmons, Johnny Hill.
But I still thought they could win.
A back five in the scrum. Oh, they could.
Okay, Hepburn, ace. Inard started, but Yendall is club captain, came off the bench. Bloody good player. Harry Williams is an England international.
And Exeter had loads of chances and they didn't convert.
And
it'll be interesting when we talk. I'll give a clue about. Should we say who our special guest is?
Yeah, go on.
JP Doyle.
JP Doyle, of course.
The legendary, our favourite ref. We will be interesting to ask JP Doyle about one of the law variations, which is that if you're held up over the line, it's a dropout from under the post rather than a 5 metre scrum. Because Exeter, I don't know how and to what extent that affected how effective they were at what Exeter do so well.
Yeah. Did you see the drop goal the other day?
Hmm?
There's a drop goal the other day. I was in the French leagues, I'm sure. And the dropout was. Not the dropout. Hang on, where does the dropout occur? From behind the goal line?
Yeah, under the sticks, like rugby league.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So the dropout occurred, which of course is perfect range for someone to drop goal it back, which is of course what they did. 3 points immediately.
Love it.
So Frans Steen is going to be filling his boots.
Oh, I'd not thought of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they'll be kicking left or right rather than straight.
They better be, because otherwise they're just going to pump it back over the posts.
Interesting.
I mean, that would be the ultimate disappointment, wouldn't it? If we've done this law variation, so we get rid of the scrum. By the way, we shouldn't be doing that, but we have. And then Frans Steen just batters it. Yeah, he extends his career by 5 years.
Yeah, it is going to remove one of your favourite parts of rugby, the 5 metre scrum.
Yes, I think that's a travesty, because the 5 metre scrum from repeated pressure is a wonderful sight. I don't understand why I can kind of get behind the 50-22 or whatever it is. That's sort of interesting. This isn't. I think it's a really dull bit of thinking, but it is what it is.
Well, we'll get onto the law variations and stuff in a little bit. As for Exeter, I'm not too concerned. I think Leicester were right to identify that one of the reasons they were able to attack so well, and they did do it really well and took their chances brilliantly, is because they were winning the collisions. I think from Exeter's point of view, those five names that I mentioned, you suddenly put them in your team, you'll
win more of the collisions. But Leicester Tigers, yeah, they've sent out a little warning shot to everyone.
I think they have. And Welford Road's going to be full again. It's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, awesome. Another unpredictable, another result I didn't predict was Worcester Warriors.
Yeah, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I said about them last week, if they're going to win, it's going to be in these first three games.
You did say that.
It happens every year because they'll be fully fit, fully firing. They'll have almost all their new signings. I don't think Van der Merwe can play, but everyone else can play. And they look strong. You know, Venter's a good player. Lawrence is a good player. I mean, they're really good players. And then they've got the Premiership class of both Willie Hines and Owen Williams. And this isn't actually a new pairing. It's an existing pairing. They've just basically brought it over from Gloucester. So they're in good shape. They've also added this David Duke fella. I've not seen the game because... Well,
hold on, isn't David Duke... When you said that name, it suddenly rang some bells about some like controversial figure in America.
Hang on.
Just like a kind of white supremacist.
Christ, is that... Christ, have I just said the white supremacist rather than the actual...
KKK or something.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He is the leader of the KKK. David.
Well, I'm glad I've checked that out anyway. If that is...
Christ, I hope I'm right. Craig, David. What the hell's this guy's name?
Craig David, is that what you're saying? Craig David is on the staff at Worcester, pumping them up with pre-match tunes.
Hang on,
No, you're not deleting this out of the podcast. This is great. God.
No, it's not.
I saw you reaching for the computer, about to go, hitting pause.
Who? I'm sure his name's Duke.
Duke David?
Craig.
Oh, no, David Duke's a basketball player.
As I said.
He's in the NBA.
Well, look, they've got a new fitness coach. I'm sure his name is David Duke. No, we can't. No, surely not. Anyway.
Whoever the Worcester conditioning coach is.
Oh no, I feel worse for him than I do for me.
No, you don't need to worry about that.
Well, nobody knows who the Worcester conditioning coach is except for a handful of people, and now we put this on a podcast and everyone's going to think of the Worcester conditioning coach as a white supremacist now, which he's not.
No. Well, whoever it is, well done to the Worcester conditioning coach, because he's obviously got him into great shape, I think was the point you were making.
That's exactly the point that exactly, 100% the point that I was making. He is a huge part of what Jonathan Thomas is going to do. And if they're going to be successful, they're going to need him to they're going to need him to perform the role that people like Adam... I'm not going to say any more names. I was going to name the old conditioning coach for Wales, but I'm not going to do it in case I get it wrong. But the old conditioning coach for Wales, Paul Strigin,
yeah.
Was there an Adam Beard? Or is that
the Adam second, Beard's the second row.
But is it also a Beard who is the conditioning? I'm a mess. My head's gone. That's what Jonathan Thomas wants. He wants that role, and it looks like they've done okay.
Yes, and so, you know, fair play to Worcester, and equally, London Irish. Not a great start for them.
Well, they scored their points, and that's kind of what I thought they would do, is score points. I didn't expect them to concede 36, though.
Yeah, that is a concern.
Yeah, it's a massive concern. I think they'll come good. I think they will be top four contenders, but maybe not this week. They're going to be good, you know. They're going to be really,
really
good.
At home, they're going to be a match for anyone.
It's the most expensive squad in the Premiership.
What?
It's the most expensive squad in the Premiership.
Surely not.
It is. I mean, I'm not saying it's a... I didn't say it's the best value, but it's the most expensive.
No, I'm not having that. Are you including marquee players in that? Because...
Well, they've only got one of them.
Sir Charles and Semi.
Well, that's two marquees. So you can only have one now, unless you can grandfather them in. But, I mean, what was the rumoured salary of one of those second rows?
£900,000 per year.
It's quite a lot, isn't it? It's quite a lot.
That is quite a lot. That's I'm just doing quick maths. It's about 18% of your entire salary cap on one guy.
Don't get me wrong. I'm sure Sean O'Brien's cheap. I'm sure Paddy Jackson's cheap. I'm sure they're all cheap. They're really, really cheap, right? No. So, allegedly, it's the most expensive squad, or one of the most expensive squads.
Oh, I can believe it's right up there, yeah. They'll be spending every penny they can.
Yeah. But, yeah, you're absolutely right. Disappointing. It kind of plays into what I think of them, which is they can score a lot, but they need to sort out the conceding of these points. It was their problem all towards the end of last year. And it goes back to something which Pat Lam said about his Bristol team, which is he focuses on... I mean, certain coaches do it certain ways, but this is the way Pat Lam does it, and I assume that this is exactly what Declan Kidney was doing, which is you focus on one area of your game, and as you get better, the bit you left behind slowly catches up. So Bristol's focused on their attacking shape and scoring the tries, and then eventually the defence caught up. I thought that London Irish would be going through a similar sort of process, but we're only one game in, so don't worry, they're still making top four, London Irish fans.
Yeah, agreed. Now, here's one question for you. Who would win in a cage fight between Joe Marler and Carl Ferns?
Oh, Carl Ferns. No, wouldn't even be close. Oh, did it happen today?
Well, the two of them squared up, and there was... I mean, it never got to anything more than handbags, because it never does within a rugby game anymore. But
it put him in a bin.
But when they were squaring up, and, you know, I just thought, that is a matchup I want to see.
Yeah. I don't even know who won this. I got to half-time. Then had to leave. So who won?
Harlequins won.
What was the score?
Comfortably in the end. Well, they won by 9 points, I can't remember. More than a score in the end. But Newcastle gave a good account of themselves. Harlequins did Harlequins, Quinsy things. And Tommaso Allen did it in his way, but very much still in the mould of Marcus Smith. That's a really good signing, that.
It's a bloody good win,
It's a really good signing, and a good win. Newcastle, Adam Radwan, with the England coach, a couple of England coaches, Cockers was there, and Matt Proudfoot was there, and Adam Radwan looked absolutely electric.
Do you think Proudfoot or Cockers actually even knows who Radwan is? Do you think Radwan's skill set comes across their desk and that's interesting?
No, they weren't there to watch him, were they?
They were not there to watch it. I'd love to listen to a conversation between those two, though. Because I've spoke to Proudfoot at the AJ Bell, and he is a proper rugby geek in the best way. Like, he'll talk rugby with anyone. In fact, he spoke rugby with me. That's how much he likes rugby. I've interviewed Cockers, no nonsense, but very, very astute. Listening to those two talk about rugby would be phenomenal.
I'd love to have sat next to the two of them and having a natter, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, I'm pretty sure they just ignored Radwan. I bet they were more interested in the Ferns-Marler square-off.
Yeah, 100%. I think Marler was the one they would have been there to see more than anyone. I was trying to go through the packs and think, who else would they be looking at? Kenningham as well. And Don Brandt.
Yeah, there's a fair few. It's not Dave Wilson. My head's completely gone.
Names today.
I can't do it. I can't do it.
The prop. Is that what you're thinking of?
No, definitely not Dave Wilson, the prop. Although that is a name that is coming out. The bloody captain. The guy that was at Sale. The England 7. The hardest man in rugby. King of the North.
Oh, Mark Wilson.
Mark Wilson.
Yeah, I don't think he was playing.
Was he not?
I'm trying to think now. No, I don't think he... Will Welch...
Callum Chick
wasn't playing, so, or didn't start at least, so, or wasn't playing, I don't think so. But yeah, anyway, Adam Radwan is just ridiculous. The guy's a freak.
Completely agree.
Harlequins picked up where they left off. You know, they'll get better. Newcastle looked decent. It was a good game.
Yeah,
enjoyed it.
I didn't see any of Sale Sharks. I have looked high and low for this, except for the Premiership website. I don't know if it could. It might be on there.
I saw Raffy Quirk, again, very much like Adam Radwan, the explosivity of Raffy Quirk is brilliant.
He's a good player.
I'm going to put it out there. Faf is amazing, but now you've got Raffy Quirk, I think you could better spend £500,000.
Well said. This is exactly my thinking. It's not that you don't want Faf to
Quirk. Of course, but we've got finite resources.
Yeah, and... Faf is well paid, and I think he's got a deal with Adidas, maybe something like that. So he's obviously well paid. He's got a deal with Adidas. Everyone at Sale loves him, and actually, it was probably the signing of Faf which launched Sale into this new era.
Absolutely.
That said, I would not mind seeing that money redistributed elsewhere. and strength.
After this season, like, if Pfaff brings them the title this season,
off you go. Get to France.
Thanks very much. You're a club legend, and yeah, we've got Raffy Quirk now. Who? How much better will Raffy Quirk be for having emerged with Pfaff de Klerk as his mentor?
And I'm certain that Selle are now focusing on English talent. I'm absolutely certain that this is. I mean, I've not heard it officially, but I'm pretty sure that that is the direction that they're going. Not seen this game. I thought they would lose to Bath. I thought they'd come out cold. Did they win by 1 point in the end?
20 points to 19, and Orlando
Bailey missed a kick at the end.
Missed a kick at the end, which could have won it.
Yeah. If he'd have got that kick, basically the get. I'm imagining it's the game that I had imagined on Friday. But I don't know, because I can't watch it. And there's no Channel 5 highlights. And it's not on the BT Sport website, which is ridiculous.
One thing I will say, and if you have BT Sport, my recommendation would be to always record, whether you watch it or not, live, record the Sunday programme. Mm-hmm. Because the hour build-up to the Sunday game, they go through all the highlights of the matches.
Perfect. Now, did you see the biggest rugby event of the weekend?
Australia beating South Africa again?
Incorrect.
That was good, by the way. Corabetti again was doing Corabetti things.
More eyes on a rugby player than any other event this weekend.
Was it that outrageous Argentina try against New Zealand?
No.
Albeit they lost. No. What was the big rugby, the most watched, most viewed, most talked about rugby event of the weekend?
Ugo kicking goals at Twickenham for Strictly Come Dancing.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, well, this is Ugo's first week of Strictly.
Yeah.
So my daughter and my niece love Strictly Come Dancing. They love it. So I had to watch, I think he was on last. So I watched 2 hours of Strictly Come Dancing yesterday just to get 10 minutes of Ugo. He's pretty good, you know. He's pretty good. I don't think he's going to win. But I think.
Why don't you think he's going to win? Because he's with
Oti.
Oti, who's won it the last 2 years.
She's a monster. She's a legit monster. Why? Because, okay, so you've got the same-sex couple dancing. They've got to be hot favourites. They've just got to be, right? You've also got a couple of other contestants who just move incredibly well. And, you know, Ugo can move. But I feel there's stronger couples out there.
Okay.
And I also think that we should make this into, like, a feature every week. How is Ugo doing on Strictly?
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want the responsibility to watch it, so maybe you could do that on Saturday nights.
I'll do that. Yeah.
Perfect.
I'll take that on.
Yeah, because actually, more people will be watching Ugo on Strictly Come Dancing than probably we ever watch him in the Six Nations.
I need a name for that feature, though. I need to come up with a name for that feature. I'm getting thinking.
Show me the Monier. Yeah, perfect. Perfect.
Oh, that reminds me, actually. Guy Courage, which is such a good name, emailed us. contactedchasers@gmail.com with some suggestions for the league names for the season. He said the Pro 14 / United Rugby Championship Hobby League. I can't do better than that, lads. It sums it up perfectly. The Japan Top League, you should call it the Pay Gap League.
Mm-hmm, good, nice.
Players are either Haruto from accounts getting paid a pittance, or Bowden Barrett getting paid a small fortune. I like that. MLR, the Rugby Relics Pension Top Up League.
Love it.
Tier 1 players in the twilight of their careers but still have something to offer on the pitch.
We'll find out about that later.
Oh, yeah, we can ask JP Doyle about that. Good shout. Top 14, the Infinity Attrition League.
Nice.
I like that. And the Super Rugby, the Farmers and Islanders League.
Farmers. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and Gallagher Premiership, the Mustard Chino Bureaucracy League.
Nice, perfect, in fact.
That is lovely. And European Rugby Cup, the Big Money Beer Trophy.
Yeah, good.
Yeah,
I'll take that. Take it.
And he said a notable mention to the Spanish División de Honor with no branding required. What a wonderful place to watch. Because Guy is...
In Spain?
In Spain.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Very cool.
Have we covered off all the Prem games?
Just
lost to Northampton.
Lost to Northampton, yes.
Right.
We haven't touched on that. Can I say, first thing I want to say about Northampton is... One of the things we were talking about, well, in fact, two of the people we talked about last week or when we previewed the season with Northampton was a couple of the young players that really burst on the scene a couple of years ago and were looking great and then had a big dip last year. Mm. James Grayson,
yep.
George Furbank, both looked great at the yesterday, and that was great to see.
Yeah, and it's not... I don't know what Gloucester are thinking at the moment, or what shape their team is in, or if this is a full-time move. Eyebrows were raised when I saw Ben Morgan at second row.
Yes. I think they're trying to get someone to do the job that Ed Slater does for them. But we've talked about this how many times over the last couple of years? We've gone, do you really want to sign another winger? Have you not seen
exactly
your lock
right.
situation?
Yeah, second rows are worth their weight in gold. And I think Gloucester are going to find out this the hard way. Ben Morgan's a cracking player. He's not a second row. They're not easy to find. Have they got some sort of injury crisis at the moment?
Well, if Ed Slater was fit, he'd be playing, surely.
Garvey? So we've got Garvey, Alamano,
Alex,
Slater.
They've got Craig, Alex Craig, is it?
Yep. To be going to Ben Morgan on the first game of the season after everyone's rested, alarm bells should be ringing, big time.
Yeah, and we've talked about it many times. If there was one area of your squad you felt you could improvise, I'd rather shift a fullback on the wing.
Yes, absolutely.
Than a back row to lock. I wouldn't want to not have enough resources in that position.
Yeah, so just disappointing it's a disappointing selection. Maybe it's not. Maybe this is a long-term solution that Gloucester are looking at. But, they're going to be in for a long season, I feel.
Yeah. Well, I think I had them 11th in my... 12th.
I had them ahead of Wasps. And I was going to say, how do Wasps go? But we don't know.
Because we don't know yet.
They've got a day off.
They've had to sit and watch.
Yeah, yeah. So there were some other rugby dramas this weekend. Did you see...
One of the things that popped into my head and where I thought you were going when you were saying the big rugby moment of the weekend being Strictly, I thought you were going to talk about the tackle in the top 14.
Is it even the top 14? I don't even know where this tackle occurred.
It was cast.
Was it?
A tackle by... What was the player?
Rhino.
Rhino Peters.
Rhino Peters.
Rhino Peters from Cast. And so this was... Premier Sports posted a clip of it on Twitter. That place for reasoned, well thought out, nuanced discussion.
Yeah.
And they said, an absolutely shocking tackle from Cast's Rhino Peters. You won't see many more straightforward red cards than this one. They posted a clip online, which seems like the vast majority of people completely agreed with that sentiment, including Nigel Owens, MBE, who said, I never get involved in sightings or length of ban conversations.
Except for popular ones.
Except for ones that lots of people are talking about. But this was as obvious a red card as you will see. And well done, Roman. No TMO lengthy conversations, but it has to now be followed by a very, very lengthy ban.
Right. So here's where I stand. When you watch that tackle for the first time, you're like, that is pretty reddish, isn't it?
Yeah, please go and watch it if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, you need to see it. It's a red card all day long. It's high, it's late, it's reckless, it's at least shoulder to head, if not head on head, yada, yada, yada. That's what you think of initially because of how fast it happens and how violent it is.
It is incredibly violent.
It's vicious. It's got malice and intensity.
Brutal.
But then you start breaking it down and you go, right, okay, so there's something wrong here. There's definitely something wrong. But it's not high. So when you look at it, it's not high. You think, okay, well, it's chest level.
Yeah. Can I describe the tackle just in case you're listening and you haven't seen it? So a player from, is it Bordeaux? I think it's Bordeaux. Player from Bordeaux is the scrum half, is standing back kind of in a fullback position. He fields a ball and goes to kick it back up the field, playing a little bit of kick tennis. Rhino Peters is chasing and trying to hit the nine before he kicks it. As the nine kicks it, or momentarily afterwards, Rhino Peters dives in midair and absolutely cleans him out.
Yeah. Now, this would not bother me. You know, tackles in the top 14 don't bother me, except for the reaction that it got. Now, if you watch the tackle again, it's not high. So if you just judged it by the high tackle framework, you would come to the conclusion that there is no offence committed here, because he hits perfectly at chest height.
What about, I think the thing that people look at that tackle and assume that it's egregious and awful is, because I don't think anyone could watch the replays and think, oh, that was high. I think people will go, oh, no, actually, he was legal.
Yeah, so it must have been a shoulder charge, right?
It must be the jumping into it and it must have shoulder charge, no arms.
Absolutely not.
He completely wraps.
So the arms, and this is the incredible thing, the arms are wrapped. So it's low enough at least. You've got a wrap. Now, here's the next part. Now, I disagree with Phil on this quite a lot. And he says it's out of control because control means that you could stop. So if the ball is already moved, I guess, and I'm speaking for Phil, he can talk for himself when he returns, but I guess he would say, and it's a reasonable point, that he was out of control because someone in control could have stopped when that ball went. But on the other hand, I've seen lots of examples of when the ball has been shipped on and the ref goes, committed. Can you think of a tackle like that in recent history, Tim? Maybe Courtney Laws?
Oh, yeah.
Courtney Laws on Pleason, who was reffed by who? Nigel Owens.
Yes.
So that can't possibly be the case.
And when you actually look at it, the time between kick, at the moment he kicks, the guy is initiating the tackle.
Yes. It's not the latest one that I've ever seen.
No, it's not the latest one you've ever seen.
No.
But fine, you might say it's late, but late tackles occasionally happen. I don't think that's a red card late tackle.
So he's low enough.
He's low enough. He wraps his arms.
And that tells me he's in control. If you've wrapped your arms, you're in control. I don't know how else you...
People are looking at it, are thinking, and assuming that someone jumping and diving into him is illegal.
Not a law. There is no law that says you cannot jump into a tackle.
As the tackler.
As the tackler.
There is a law to say you can't do it as the ball carrier.
And this is what Nigel Owens is saying, right? So Nigel Owens is saying on his tweet, oh, you can't just launch like that. I'm thinking, well, I think you can. Because it doesn't say in the laws you can't jump in this plane, that plane, or the other.
Yeah, far be it from me to wade in and pretend I know better than one of the world's best ever referees. I think Nigel Owens is totally wrong on this.
He's utterly, utterly wrong. And the worst thing is, he has this appeal to authority, and you know he's wrong, and I know he's wrong, because he actually asked me how... He says, I don't know where you ref. Like, it matters. I'm smart enough to read the rules.
Well, that's like
laws.
That's like people who read official data at the moment, say what the data says, and then go, oh, you're not a virologist.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, he's wrong. So, what laws must he be referring to? So, there's 9.11, which I think is dangerous play. And I can't get my head around dangerous play because it just says dangerous play. Now, I understand
you... Oh, I love the fact we've got JP Doyle coming on in a minute. Oh, brilliant.
We will be asking him these questions. So, dangerous play, to me, it doesn't make sense. Relatively dangerous play would make sense. Or dangerous play after a... infraction has been committed, but just dangerous play. What does that even mean? I mean, this year alone, in this calendar year alone, I've seen someone with a broken tib and fib, and I've also seen someone dislocate their shoulder. Rugby is dangerous. It's a dangerous... That law is completely inappropriate. It's appropriate if you've already infringed, but as you and I have just discussed, there is no infringement. He's in control. He's wrapped his arms. There is no law saying that you can't jump into a tackle.
The only debate there is it late? Is it late?
Yeah, is it late? Now, if you want to say it's late with force, I'm with you. You can give it a red if that's what you want to do.
I don't think that's why the majority of people are looking at that and thinking, well, and again, this is Nigel Owens saying it deserves a very, very lengthy ban.
On what basis?
Justify what you're saying. You can't launch yourself like that. Well, actually, yes, you can.
Yeah, and he's brought up two laws which don't, are not really applicable to this, because the dangerous tackle law says is includes high but not includes but is not excluded. Sorry, includes but is not exclusive to high tackles. Well, there's nothing more to it. And you know, I have got a bunch of players on my WhatsApp who are basically agreeing. Like, yeah, there is nothing to see here. Now, there is also the outcome-based part of reffing, which is, you know, I smash into you, I'm bigger than you, for instance, and then you're concussed. And the outcome, you then might look for something.
I've talked about it before with Faf de Klerk. A few times he's put in high shots, made contact with the head of like a 21-stone tight head prop. Nothing
no one
happened.
Cares.
No one cares.
Yeah.
On you go.
But here's the outcome of it. The scrum half's okay. So what Nigel Owens is actually talking about is he's not comfortable with things that don't look good for camera. And I can completely appreciate where he's coming from here, because if there's one thing he's also exceptional at, if it's not just reffing, it's playing up to cameras. So he knows exactly what he's looking for. But that's it. And if I look at the people who are also talking about this incident, I mean, the head of Premiership bloody comms doesn't know the laws of his own game. And it's so frustrating, because people think, they legitimately think, that being off your feet in a tackle is a law. It is not a law. If you think it's a law, well, no, it's not fair to say you don't know the game, because everyone commenting on this post knows the game. The fault is probably with the game for having laws which are not fit for purpose, so it should be either relatively dangerous, or there should be a law written down saying, I don't know, something... There needs to be a law if you think that... Well, if you think that that tackle is unacceptable, there needs to be a law to outlaw it.
I think the people that are upset with that tackle would have been upset with that tackle if the nine didn't kick and had the ball in his hands when he was hit.
Now, that is a great question, right? So what would the call be if the nine kept the ball?
I think there would be a lot of people saying that's unacceptable, it should be a red card.
I think they will go, that is the best hit I've ever seen.
I'd be saying that.
I think I'd be saying that.
I'd be saying it's the second best hit I've ever seen after our friend of the pod, Courtney Laws.
Exactly.
Hit on, please on.
Yeah, second best. But yeah, but that's a very similar situation. Nigel Owens reffed that and said, play on. Because I guess it was popular at the time, and now this one isn't popular. So, you know, he will go whichever way the wind blows, which is why he's a great ref, because, you know, he gives the people what they want. He's certainly given me some of the best games that I've ever seen, but he's just plain wrong. The people that wind me up the most, though, the people that wind me up the most are the people that bothered replying to my tweet with, you're fishing or you're being contrarian for the sake of it. The fact of the matter is, they think that because they are sucked into the monoculture of Twitter. They're incapable of thinking themselves. They're just stale-minded morons. But it is what it is.
I love not being on Twitter, mate. I do look at it, so I'm aware of the little. I saw the little video as well.
I thought, look, if I'm going to get into a Twitter spat this weekend, it's going to be with the best referee on the planet. I'm not wasting my time with
second best ref on the planet to chat to.
I'm not wasting my time with any of these losers, except for the second best ref on the planet and the head of comms for Premier Rugby. That I will do. So I guess we should go to our...
Can you get him up then?
No. I will send him a text now. Let's go through our predictions for next week.
Oh, okay, yeah. Let's do that. Yeah, you get him the little Zoom code and stuff. And
Roger that.
We'll get that sorted. So did you watch any of the the Rugby Championship, sorry?
No, none of it.
No, okay.
I'm not joking when I say this. I have been completely switched off from rugby. Despite doing a podcast once a week about it, I could not care less about any rugby that isn't really Premiership. So the Premiership being back has been all-consuming for me, and it's got its problems, but generally speaking, I absolutely loved it. So, no, I do not care what is happening in the Rugby Championship.
One thing I did notice is Gabriel Ibitoy is playing in Israel. He's playing for Tel Aviv Heat.
What now?
Yeah. He's left wherever he was in France.
He's been to two clubs in France.
Yeah.
He's playing for Tel Aviv Heat.
He's playing for Tel Aviv Heat. Dimitri Katchakalis is out there and roped him in.
What now?
Because they knew each other from Quinns.
What on earth?
Yeah, I think he's got it in his contracts. He's there for a few months, so he's got it in his contract. He can leave if any Premiership or French club come in for him. But
I imagine that would be fairly firmly written into his contract.
Yeah, so...
Wow!
There you go. The Israeli League, we'll get on that. So, the fixtures we've got for next weekend, Gloucester-Leicester at King's Home on Friday night.
Should be a classic. Should actually be... I don't know. Gloucester can't do any worse than they did this weekend. I am going to say Leicester by 3 points.
I'm going to say Leicester as well by 8. But Leicester. You also have the start of the United Rugby Championship. Not Ultimate Rugby Championship like we
yeah.
it was last week. And I'm just looking at any of the games on Friday night worth watching. Ulster Glasgow will be decent.
Yeah. Hang on. Ultra have signed Dwayne Vermaelen.
Oh, Dwayne Vermaelen. I know.
That's cool.
Brilliant.
So, just on that one, I love that Ulster have done that because it reminds me of Leicester Tigers from back in the day. And actually, a few clubs have done this, which is they used to prioritise one position over every other. For some reason, Leicester Tigers always felt that they could get the best deal out of the 12. So, Pat Howard, Gibson, Herbert went? Did he not? Herbert was to replace Howard. They've always Aaron Major.
Aaron Major.
Yeah, they've always gone for high value 12s. Ulster seem to carry on going for high value 8s.
High value 8s and high or South Africans generally.
Yeah. So Dwayne Vermaelen, fair play.
Yeah.
Great signing.
Brilliant. That'd be great. Saturday morning, by the way, 8:05 a.m. New Zealand, South Africa.
I don't know if I want to watch this anymore. I was interested when I thought South Africa might pound New Zealand. I think New Zealand are going to take care of business now.
And Australia, Argentina following that. So what's good is you've got a full game of rugby. You've got New Zealand game, New Zealand, South Africa at 8 o'clock, 11 o'clock, Australia, Argentina. At 1 o'clock, your beloved Benetton against the Stormers.
Ooh.
And then 4:00 p.m. kickoffs in the Premiership with Bath playing Newcastle. Prediction there?
Bath playing Newcastle. Every part of me wants to say Bath should win this. Newcastle. No, Bath. Bath will win that.
I'll go Bath. Exeter v Northampton.
Exeter v Exeter.
Exeter at home, I think. Quins v Worcester.
At the Stoop?
Yeah.
Quins.
And Wasps v Bristol.
Bristol.
Wasps are still missing Launchbury and a couple of other key players. Alfie Barbary's not available, and yeah, so I'm going to go.
Tell you what,
Bristol
though,
as well.
I just going back to Bristol Saracens game, and I saw those two teams. I said, didn't I, straight up, 10-point win for Bristol. I was wrong, and I had a chat with a good friend of mine who knows his rugby inside out. And we started discussing the two teams. And then it sort of dawned on me that this isn't clear-cut for Bristol as I thought it was, because Charles Pietau is clearly the man. But then they're missing so many other fellas. So there was no Afoa, there was no Sinclair. Then you realise the two lads have gone from...
Malins and Earl.
Yeah. And you add up all... there was no Radranda. Don't know where he was. Is he injured?
I assume so.
Must be. And then you start removing all these star pieces, and all you've got are the guys who are the normal gap fillers for the star pieces, surrounded by more gap fillers, and you know they weren't that good.
On to Sunday, and it's London Irish against Sale at the Brentford Community Stadium.
This is a tough game. From what I've heard about the Sale performance, which I didn't see, it was pretty scrappy. They're going to need to score points to beat London Irish. I don't think they can shut them down. They need to score points. I am going to go with London Irish.
I'm going to go with Sale.
I can go with Sale, actually. Maybe I will go with Sale. Hang on a minute. What do I
mean,
think?
The thing is, you've backed Irish for top four, and
you've also backed
Sale to win the league.
Right, Sale.
Yeah, I think. I agree. It'll be tough, and I think London Irish will be a match for anybody at home. That's
great Sunday viewing. That
Yeah, it really is. And also, if you do have access to the top 14, to lose against Claremont on Sunday night.
What time's that?
8 o'clock.
No, we'll be working.
Yeah, we'll be getting ready for the pod, obviously.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at UH1.com.
But yeah, let's get our special guest on. And we have been shorn on this podcast because of Phil's lack of signal. We've been shorn of
a voice of reason,
someone with gravitas and experience and knowledge.
Hang on, we have a special guest.
Oh, wonderful.
Hello, JP.
How are we doing, lads? Are you well? Can you hear me?
Yeah, very well, thanks, mate. How are you?
Line speed. Love a bit of line speed.
Oh, we all love line speed.
Our favourite official, one of the world's best.
Formerly.
After his American adventure. Firstly, JP, fill us in on that, your little sojourn in Atlanta and around the States.
It's fabulous over there. It's really a good league. That's a lot of reallys. It's a fabulous league. With a lot of people trying to do a lot of good out there, and you can see it every week. It's physically every week becoming better, and that's what's really cool about it. It's a really cool league. There's a lot of players out there. There's a lot of new players, but there's a lot of very established players as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting way to relaunch a career, actually. I mean, we've seen people go to America before, get a bit of game time, and then come back. Dom Waldock. Would be one, and I think there's quite a few Eagles currently playing now in the MLR.
Great way to sign off as well, as a word on Adam Ashley Cooper, who's announced his retirement.
Has he?
He signed off with the champion Giltinis.
Well, yeah, I mean, until they launch a team in Ibiza, in which case they'll all be back again.
he's gone in as coach, so he hasn't exactly left LA. He's still having a great time.
I bet he is as well. What kind of a time did you sense that Gitto and AAC and characters like this that have been there, seen it and done it, what's their experience been from what you've picked up?
They had a brilliant time, but they were so competitive. They weren't out there for can I say shits and giggles?
Yeah,
they, you know, they weren't there for that. They were there to win. They were there to win every second, every breakdown. Adam Ashley Cooper was putting himself on the line in every breakdown. He was the most competitive guy over the ball. He was the best guy in attack. They gave it everything. You know, you can say, well, they went out there into their career, but they gave everything every minute of the game, which is the best thing. That if you ever wanted to know, well, what do you do at the tail end of your career? Look what those guys were doing this year. Look at the way they were playing. Adam Ashley Cooper was one of the best players in that league by a street because of his commitment to every play, not because of what he could do, but because he went 100% at everything. So whatever he'd left in the tank was out there, which was fabulous. So people playing against him loved it, and people playing with him loved it.
I bet. And I think, I actually do think one of the reasons that lads give it up professionally, is because they can't go hard. And for a lot of them, they don't lose it. And if they can't play as hard as they possibly can, I don't think they're interested.
Yeah, no, 100%. There was so many guys popping up out there every week, you know, that were from, that must have been, if I exaggerate and say there was 100, there was at least 80 Premiership players out there. And then there was another 80 NBC boys, and then another 100 Australian boys and Zimbabweans and Argentinians and Uruguayans and it's a fabulous league and it's only going to grow massively. There is no way it can fail. It's
really?
Failure
proof. Careful now. Careful with language like that.
I can guarantee you it's failure proof.
Tell me, does it get a little bit more tasty when, say, Adam Ashley Cooper's on the field, but so is Ben Foden? Because you know, yeah, they're both got a bit of a name.
But there's that kind of wink and like I'm gonna whack you and you're gonna whack me. But there's definitely a giggle about it. But that's no different than when I was lucky enough to referee European Cup games and Dan Carter is playing 10 and there are New Zealanders playing wing forward for the Ospreys or for Glasgow.
Yeah.
And they're whacking Dan Carter and they're giggling on the ground. Wherever you are, it's a holiday and it's a buzz. If you're outside of your bubble, you're having a great time. And these guys, they could fight and have a great time. They could get on and have a great time. But what was brilliant about this league is you went for beers afterwards. It was sort of old school in its approach after the game. Like you could enjoy yourself and you were in LA or you were in Seattle or Washington or, you know, New Orleans and you were just having the most wonderful time. Like I can't speak highly enough about it without sounding like a sycophant.
I love it. And JP, we've got a bunch of American listeners who've been keeping us in the loop and being very enthusiastic. And also making it sound like a great place for us to come over. We've had invites extended from all corners. I know you caught up with the guys from the,
yeah,
our friends Warren and Preston from the American, yeah, Rugby Pod. Good lads. That's the only drawback for me is that it happened during a window of time when we couldn't come out there and share the spoils and enjoy it as well.
No, look, it's going to be a huge league. It's not about, is it going to be bigger than the Premiership? No. Is it going to be bigger than the top 14? No, but that's not what it's about. The MLS, the soccer version, isn't bigger than La Liga or the EPL or whatever you want to call the different leagues. But the American Professional League will find its own place that's separate to all of that. And there can be a Premiership and there can be a top 14 and Super Rugby and American Rugby. You don't need to, no one needs to get upset with each other for saying, well, Premiership this and top 14 that and Pro 14 this. There is enough there for everybody. There's enough meat on the bone. And it's look, there are a lot of guys out there who haven't played much rugby. That's true, but there are a lot of guys out there who are just raising the standard. There are a lot of coaches, Heineken Mayer and Alan Clark, and all these guys are out there. There are coaches making their names and getting hired as Super Rugby coaches, as you've seen this year, Darren Coleman coming out of the LA Giltinis. There is nothing I can say but a positive about that league. It sounds like I'm lying. It sounds like it's not true and I'm being a PR guy, but I can only tell you, you know, without being Pinocchio, this is how I feel about it. And this is how it went this year. And that was during COVID while things were incredibly difficult.
Now, just changing the subject slightly, did you keep up with the rugby this weekend?
Yeah. Always keep up with all the rugby around everywhere.
Because we were just breaking down the Leicester Tigers game. I'd love your two-penneth on how you think Tigers went.
No, I didn't see the Tigers was today, so I didn't see a Premiership game. I'm newly moved into Scotland here, so I don't have BT Sports yet.
You're in Scotland?
Where are you in Scotland?
I'm in Perth. I'm in Perth in Scotland, wow. Yeah.
Is that a big wholesale family move or a temporary,
yeah,
thing? Wow.
Yeah. Myself and my wife are teaching at a school up here and my daughter's in there. And yeah, so we're just up here in Perth. There was no point staying in, if they don't want you in England, what's the point of staying in England, you know? If your ex-girlfriend kicks you out, there's no point staying in her bedroom, is there? So let's get out of there and go somewhere else and find a new chick.
JP, well, how is it going so far? Culture change has settled in. How long have you been there?
Love it. Absolutely. I'm in a wonderful school, Craig Clown, a little prep school up here. I'm a school teacher by trade. My wife's a school teacher. We're happy as pigs in poop or fish in a goldfish bowl, you know. So yeah, I can only say nice things about it.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Right. Well, if you've not watched Leicester Tigers, then
No, I can change the subject and just pick up on one thing JP said. He said there's enough rugby to go round. Well, I'm going to correct you actually, JP, and say, well, apparently there's not enough because we need another tournament, the World 12s. What have you made of that? And I would just put in I'll put in a word for JP to be involved in that. When that kicks off.
I did the World 10s.
Yeah, exactly.
Apparently there's a World 12s. I think there's place for everything and creativity should never be stifled. And without creativity, we're nowhere. But I'm just wondering, so they launched this, and from what I read, and I know nothing about anything, as any of my friends will tell you, and anyone who's seen me referee, but I'm not sure how many rounds is going to be, what level they're trying to expose players to. Is it pro players? Is it developing players? Is it a chance for players who aren't international to keep playing when all the international boys are away? If it's contracted players, how are they going to get released from a 12-month contract? It's a bit trickier than it appears to be, but I do not have a high enough business degree or that sort of top end knowledge to understand. I've only read the press release. And rugby, look, we all love to play rugby. I'll play fives, 15s, sevens, 10s, 12s. Put me out there, coach. I want to be involved. But I'm not sure where the excitement is on this.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how the excitement. Tim, you're probably better. I'm sure Phil would give. I'm not sure Phil's on the call, but Phil normally gives the pragmatical approach. JB, you normally give the extremist approach, and Tim, you're normally looking for work. So I'm not sure where the three things collide on this.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely. I'm available. That's all I can say on that.
Yeah.
And Phil is not available for the podcast. Actually, he's in remote Devon in a place with no facilities or
no shipping containers.
No shipping containers available.
Yeah.
No.
I think it's hard to know. Like, how do you see that being a success? I just want that described to me. I'm not saying it won't be, but I'm just saying, what does a success look like? Rugby X came and went for whatever, COVID and 10 other thousand reasons. Rugby Sevens is just restarted today in Vancouver. Rugby League is still a big thing. Rugby Tens was kicking off and got cancelled this year. So where does Rugby 12s go? Who is it for, and what are they going to do with it?
I don't think they're going to do anything, JP. I can't see any avenue of success for this.
That is a really great and fundamental question to ask, though. What does success look like? And yeah, it would be good to have that kind of vision spelled out. And I'm sure the people involved know that, but it would be good to sort of paint that picture.
Yeah, I can't see a future for it. Which I'm not being overly negative for no reason. I just don't see what it does.
Well, if it gives you a chance to play more, but if I have to mark Charles Piatow in a bigger space, how is that fun for me? If you're asking me to do that, So who are you catering this to? Are you catering it to your National League One guys or your? Is England your? If you're launching at England, is it all English players you want to come play in it? If so, is it your Roslyn Park boys, or your Ealing boys, or is it your Leicester Tiger boys? It's
who are you targeting it at?
Who is
existing
it? Who
rugby
is
fans or converting new ones?
Yeah. And with the grace of respect, I love Ealing, I love Roslyn Park. I think they're great clubs. I'm not getting excited that those players are on my TV.
Well. I've taken a step back from rugby now, and it's interesting what rugby I'll turn on. Like, I've NFL Red Zone on here, and obviously the Ryder Cup's on next week, and Match of the Day's on. Like, I'm a general rugby consumer now, and what are you getting me to watch? Do I want to pay extra to watch Premiership, or do I want to pay? I can't watch Top 14, and do I have to pay extra to watch the URC? And at least with MLR, we show it for free. Here's the website. Watch it for free. Lads, everybody jump on. Let's have fun with it. At the moment, everyone's asking me, to pay out. If I paid all my rugby subscriptions for Sky, for Super Rugby, for BT, for Premier Sports, for, on and on and on, how much is that costing me to watch rugby? You know, and is that acceptable when most rugby consumers are like me? They have a wife and children and, you know, expenses around themselves. And is, you know, is BT or what goes first? Does Sky go first? Does PT go first? Who do I watch?
Yeah, well, my
JP, but I'll just jump in and say, yeah. if you want to get out of the classroom again, CEO at Premiership Rugby, we were just discussing this earlier, that job's still available, and it sounds like you'd be an ideal person
it's open.
To grab the reins.
Yeah.
Hey, I can't even keep my present job as a referee, so what chance have I got to keep anything else? Mm. No, I would love to be back involved in rugby, and I miss it dearly, but I also don't miss it because I can't see it. It's just not visible. I don't see rugby because unless I go out of my way to watch it, it's just not visible anywhere.
Yeah, you've got to find rugby. It doesn't find you.
Yeah.
It's a very good point. Now, before we had you on the line, JP, me and Tim had a robust discussion about a certain tackle in the French League. Now, I'm not going to ask you to comment on that tackle. I believe you've seen it, but I don't want you to comment on that tackle. But I would like you to run us through what constitutes a tackle, what is legal, and what is not. And I'll fire some questions at you as we go along.
Yeah, sure, yeah. Don't believe everything I say, but yeah, sure.
Okay, then. So, just, you know, what does the law say about what an actual tackle is?
So a tackle, you must wrap and bring the player to the ground. Now, there's always been debate over whether it's, you know, bringing to ground and wrapping and what comes first or whatever. But the idea is you must use your arms in the tackle to complete a wrap, and you must bring the player to ground.
Okay.
And it must, so, and from a legal point of view, the tackle must not be high, late, or dangerous.
Right. Okay. High, late, or dangerous. Now, I want to focus on the dangerous part. So, law.
Well, we know what high looks like, and we know what late looks like.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I honestly.
But my question to you would be: do you know what late looks like?
Well, actually,
well, no. Well, it's,
no.
No. Context changed. It's context specific, and no. There's no hard and fast rules. You know it when
so you
see
have,
it.
You have to leave that with the referee. Don't
yeah, you,
you
leave yeah. that with the referee. But I trust the referee to know that when they see it.
I think
so. High is something we can delineate. It's something we can be black and white about. It either is high or it isn't. But dangerous has to be in the view of the referee, and late has to be in the view of the referee.
Yeah. Agreed. So I do understand late, and I'm happy to leave that in the. To the discretion of the referee, because I've seen referees say he was committed. I don't know what difference that makes, because one of the other criticisms often levelled at a tackler is that the guy wasn't in control, and that's why the bad thing happened. I would argue that would apply to a late hit. So if you hit someone late, it's either malicious and you were in control, or you weren't in control because you were quote-unquote committed, and therefore it becomes reckless. Does that make sense?
Yeah, you've got to. Okay, so this is, we're getting into the weeds here a little bit.
Love
okay,
it.
So yeah, this... we have to use the correct terminology, otherwise we're goosed. Okay. So you can't use the word hit because that's nothing to do with anything. That's a nonsense.
Okay.
So we have to use, you can tackle somebody who has the ball, and you can tackle them between the shoulders and the tippy toes. Okay, you can't go higher than that, and you can't obviously go lower than that. You have to wrap your arms, and you have to attempt to bring them to ground safely. So any sort of tipping is obviously illegal. Any sort of tackling above the shoulders, around the neck, whether that's terminology, seatbelt tackle, it's all irrelevant. It's whether the tackle is on the neck or not. Okay, so that is the high. Late is that the player has got rid of the ball and should be allowed freely run and support the ball carrier who now has the ball, or chase the ball if it's been kicked. So you've got to stay away from words like hit and smash and all these words. They're just colloquial coaching terms that have no place in law.
Okay.
They exist in the game the same way, you know, if you ever watch A Few Good Men, the mess hall, Code Red, all those things, they exist in the army, but they don't exist in the army manual.
That
so
is
we
a
have to,
really
we have
way to
stick,
put it.
We have to stick to what's in the manual, which is our law book.
Yeah.
Which is you must not take you must not tackle someone high, late, or dangerous.
Okay.
The dangerous one's the one that I can't get a handle on. And again, I trust the discretion.
Law 9.11.
I trust the discretion and the interpretation of an official, and whatever the referee says is what it is on the field, and accept it and move on. But I can get a handle on late. We can debate whether you agree or disagree, but at least I can get a handle on that. I can't really get a handle on dangerous.
Yeah. I can't either.
So dangerous is the idea, right? So you can't write the law book to encapsulate everything that happens on the rugby pitch. So we write the law book in the best intentions, and then obviously the law of unintended consequence comes in there, and we have the schmozzle sometimes we have around laws and bits and pieces. And that's why countries will write edicts to World Rugby saying, can we question law 9.11, and can we say what is dangerous? But the idea is dangerous is if you do not attempt to wrap. So, for example, I could try and tackle JB, who's clearly bigger than me being a Smurf, and JB being more robust.
I've also got brilliant feet.
So, you know, with his big pecs. So if I was to tackle you and I was to try and wrap and you were to bounce me off, I would failure to complete the wrap, but it's not a penalty. But if I try and tackle you and I bounce you off and I don't try and complete the wrap, that's a penalty. So the same action with one person being stronger than the others can be a penalty, and it cannot be a penalty. So there has to be that little middle ground. We live in the grey in rugby because we can't define every sort of contact that comes in a law book, because the law book would be 150 million pages long and we just wouldn't get there. So dangerous is the way in which you try and complete a successful tackle under law.
So
if I led with my shoulder and left my arms way behind and I smashed you with my shoulder, using colloquialism, a coaching term, and then my arms came up after to try and wrap, well, I could be viewed as not being dangerous because my arms were wrapping after my shoulder. But if you ran into me and I tried to hit you really hard and you ran into my shoulder and pushed me backwards doing the exact same tackle and my arms came through when I did complete the tackle, it's not a dangerous tackle.
Yes.
So it's beholden onto the person who's going into the tackle. So the same action with success and failure could be seen as dangerous or not dangerous. And that has to be accepted.
Yeah.
And the overall I refereed a game here yesterday in Scotland, which was a level 7 game in England, equivalent Percher versus Last Wade. And I talked to the guys about, my job is to get you to turn up on Monday safely. You know, I have to make sure everyone's safe. We're getting through this game safely. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be absolutely poleaxed in a tackle, but it means I have to make sure everyone's behavior is that we're being within the laws of what's described in the game, the agreed set of criteria between the two teams.
So
that's a good place as anything to start from.
Let's just go back to your point about dangerous, because I completely agree with that. That's exactly how I interpret it, which is the dangerous play thing applies once a law has been broken. So not wrapping is a great...
No, potentially, because you can do the same thing being the aggressor in the tackle or being the subordinate in the tackle.
Yeah, but there's still a law been broken.
Not, but I haven't broken law. But there are times when we say, look, I'm sorry, we just got to... That's just too dangerous.
Well, so the wrapping the tackle is a great one, because that is, you do have to wrap your arms by law. That is a law. Now, you're happy to waive that law if the guy not rapping has just been steamrolled. But you're not happy to waive that law if the guy who was not rapping has absolutely clattered the guy with the ball. So,
but that's an agreed outcome before you start, both teams. You say, look, if you are a dominant tackler, you have to rap. You can't have the guy bounce off you. You have to hit him. If you want to hit him so hard that he's going to bounce off you, you need to make sure you bring him to ground safe.
Yeah, and the wrap is actually the vehicle we use as rugby players to make sure that you're not hitting that hard, because if you do, he's going to bounce off you. You can't wrap.
Yeah,
penalty.
Like the best way for me to tackle a bigger guy would be to tuck my shoulder, my arm into my chest, and tuck my shoulder so I could, like in the NFL, so I could bowl him over.
So,
but when I when I open my arms, I become more fragile in the shoulders. So I'm probably not going to hit with the same tonnage as I would if I could tuck my arms in tight.
So can you give me an example?
That's why we do it. That's why rugby league and rugby union differentiate. Mm.
So can you give me an example of dangerous play being applied in a situation where no law has been broken? So with that example that you give me there with the wrapping, that to me is a law breach, and therefore it could be dangerous. It couldn't be dangerous.
So I think you're literally describing the best example. Which I'm not. If I was someone who could tackle and I could whack a guy really hard, colloquialism coaching term, and I hit him so hard deliberately and I tried to wrap him at the same time, but I failed to wrap, but I deliberately hit him really hard on my shoulder, well, I could consider that dangerous because I could have taken 10% off that to make sure I completed the wrap, which is the agreed way that we're going to play this game.
Agreed. Yeah.
So if you whack someone so hard and I leave my hand 10 degrees lower than I needed to make the wrap because I'm 10% stronger, well, if I'm penalized, as harsh as that may be, is to protect everyone, all 30 or 46 players who are playing that day, or if it's local rugby, 30 or 36, three subs, whatever it may be, that this is how we behave. Now, it doesn't mean if I tackle someone and they bounce off me, I'm going to be penalised. Not at all. But it leaves me open to the referee's discretion.
I love that, JP. One of the things you've just done there is absolutely crystallise and make me feel so much better about one of the things which I've sort of worried it could potentially go further too far with rugby, of that kind of safety culture, safety-ism, actually just penalising really hard play. But actually, I love what you're saying, and the fact that a referee would set that out at the start. Hit the guy as hard as you want, but if you do that,
make sure you wrap.
Be whiter than white in terms of the laws, and then you'll give me no reason.
So I think,
really like that.
I think that law should be rewritten to say dangerous play occurs where a law has been violated.
You need to leave something. So my dad always talked about, if you were in the casino or if you were a Paddy Power and you win a bet, you want to make sure you don't try and take the house. Right.
Yeah.
So you can whack people as hard as you want, but you can't have every single thing. You got to leave something for the referee. And as a referee, if I feel that JB is smashing Tim, and I don't think that was a safe thing to happen, and I don't think you completed every law I've asked of you, as you said, you've infractioned somewhere, but you've got to leave something for me to protect other
people. The infraction has to exist. We've got to agree.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. It can't just be if I absolutely go in and lawnmower you in the knees and both your ACL goes.
Courtney Law's on Jules Pleason style.
That's not that's not the fault of the tackler. That's just the way life goes, and we accept risk of sport. JB, you spoke to Mark Evans before about the accepted risk of when you turn up to play for your local side, that you, no matter what it told you, you accept the risk of playing. So your risk is that potentially in 20 years of playing, you might get one ACL injury or PCL or ankle ligaments or whatever it is, but you accept that risk.
Yeah.
So we all accept that. What we don't accept is a player diving with his arm tucked at my knee that blows my knee out. We do not accept that. And that's why in the olden days, you were sent off red card to stop your face being kicked in by the rest of the opposition. Now you're sent off for infractions, which is totally different.
Yeah.
Local rugby, Perthshire versus Las Wade, you're only sent off if you're a complete, am I allowed to say bell end?
Yeah, absolutely. You are.
So you're only sent off if you're a complete bell end. And you only yellow card if, like, I think we had 6 penalties in the game, and that was a pretty dirty game by referees. You know, it was a relatively dirty game, but there's no chance of a yellow card. There's no chance of a red card unless someone does something so stupid I have to red card him because the other 15 guys are going to batter him.
Okay, so let's just clear up some of the myths then. Leaving your feet in the tackle is not a law. is it? There's a lot of speculation. There is a law off your feet in the tackle. Now, there is off your feet lying down on the floor, which is a law, but not jumping.
No, you can jump. You can jump. You can't jump out of a tackle, but you may jump into a tackle.
Yeah,
yeah, and it's been done many, many times when someone's covering to like corner flagging to try and catch a winger.
If you remember the famous George Gregan on exactly. Jeff Wilson tackles to win the Tri Nations all those years ago. You know, you can definitely jump into a tackle. There's no problem about that, but you can't jump out of a tackle.
I'm astonished that no. Still, here's what I think. I was talking to a bunch of business bods in a lunch on Friday, and the subject of Emma Raducanu came up, and people are saying, "What an amazing spectacle!" I'm thinking, like, how much tennis do you guys actually watch? But the point was, after not watching tennis, some of these guys for like 20 years, 10 years, they turn on the TV, and what they saw was a game of tennis. And everyone, to a man or a woman, understood the rules in front of them and they understood the game of tennis. What amazes me is how many people who watch rugby on a regular basis still don't get the rules. And to be fair, until I actually had to look these rules up this weekend, I did not know.
Laws
of the game, rules of the competition.
Rules of the competition, laws of the game. Don't let anyone ever correct you. But it doesn't matter.
But
yeah.
Arguably,
it does not matter.
That, what you've just described, JB, is one of the... biggest challenge that rugby has. And again, you know, Ugo's on Strictly Come Dancing, there'll be a load of, you know, I don't watch Strictly Come Dancing, my missus and my daughter do, but
of course you do, of course you do.
I watched an hour and a half of Strictly
You're
just to get
liar,
Ugo
too.
For 10 minutes.
You're an absolute liar.
but I will be able to watch that, and even though I won't know the intricacies, I'll form opinions on, oh, that was good, oh, that wasn't as good, oh, that was really good, that one. Because you can get a sense of what you're looking at. Rugby, that's the biggest barrier to rugby. Now we get that because we're inside.
Well, I mean, yeah, we do, and we don't,
and we also
We actually don't. To be fair, we do if we actually sit down and Google the laws, which is exactly what I did this weekend.
Perfect example of that, Tim, is if you're watching the Olympics and you're watching synchro diving off the platform and you start talking about, well, I don't think he tucked as well as he could have done, and yeah, you know, the splash was too high, having never watched, you know, you can watch equestrian 3-day eventing and say, I don't think the horse is dancing well enough. You know, that's what we do when we get into sport. We start pontificating, and that's the best part of sport.
But I think the problem with rugby is, like, even this season we've got two new law variations. If you dipped out of rugby 5 years ago and came back today, you would be baffled what is going on.
And I can tell you from a broadcasting point of view, that's a really tough balance to get, where you're speaking on a level with people that are nauseous like you and I, but you're also being inclusive. And it's why sometimes people who watch rugby all the time get like criticise like Channel 4 when they do a real obvious explanation of a law that they feel is talking down to them a little bit. That's just one of the big challenges rugby's got when it's balancing carrying the people it already has but reaching out into new places.
Yeah. Well, here's an example. I'm a rugby pick and I love rugby beyond belief. But the things I love about rugby are probably not as relevant as they were anymore. You know, I love, you know, my greatest thing I've ever seen in rugby is the Brian O'Driscoll 2001 break, inside outside, beats the fullback, Joe Roth chasing across.
Yeah.
I just don't see those elements of rugby involved anymore. I see crossfield kick chips through Alex Lazowski off the right foot, kicking it on the ground to another guy. They're not things that are relevant to the rugby that I grew up and I know. And you know, that's where I find it all a little disappointing at the moment. I just think rugby's in a trickier place than it's been in before. It's still a wonderful game, and you know, locally, it's still the same game it ever was. But I just don't find it the same game it was. I think there's a lot of people that feel that way.
I don't know. I believe it goes in cycles. You know, we saw the genius of Shane Williams, and there'll never be another one of them until Chas and Colby shows up. you know, who's an identical player who shouldn't really, you know, he's a unicorn. He shouldn't really exist. You know, Fafa be another one that shouldn't really exist. And, you know, when the game goes too far in one direction, it almost always autocorrects. And I think one of the most dangerous things we can do is legislate to correct it ourselves. Just let the boys get on with the game, and eventually it always autocorrects.
Well, let the boys play.
Yeah?
Let the boys play. I disagree a little bit, and I would say you can. It's not about ripping anything up and starting again, but I think you can incentivize, because I'm with JP in the style of rugby. What I fell in love with first was the way that France played rugby classically in the, well, it's forever they've played like that, but the offloading, flooding through gaps, the way that France played in the, what, that'd been late 80s, early 90s, just, that's what I absolutely loved. Sorry?
The World Cup semi.
Oh, yeah.
That was one that got me.
My mum, one day when my mum had to work on a Saturday, and so me and my brother, she just took us into the office, and we went to Woolworths, and she bought Rugby World Cup 87 video. And I watched that video, and I must have watched it 100 times since. But the game between France and Fiji in the 87 World Cup, that's when I fell in love with rugby.
France and Fiji 2003 was probably one of the all-time great games.
Oh, my word, wasn't it? Yeah.
You know, I just don't know. The World Cup that's just been and went, and England got to the final and did brilliant and actually played a wonderful semi-final. But I don't remember big moments from that World Cup.
That's an interesting
point. I wish I did. I don't. I remember 91 and 95 and 03 and 07. I just don't really remember.
And we remember Japan in 2015.
Well, I mean, we
I was there. I was there. It was at my feet.
Of course it was. My word.
I was cheering them all the way into the corner.
Wow. You know, was that the greatest moment of your career?
I think the greatest squeal I've ever given was they flooded right. They had a penalty to kick 3 points to draw the game, and they turned it down, which was just to the left of the post. And they chose a scrum, and they went right off the scrum. They played out, and they did brilliant. And then they had one or two hit backs, and they were still on the far touchline. And as they came back, I could see it was a 5-on-1 or 5-on-none, and it was very slow to develop. And the ball got to, I think it's, help me with the name, Adamanke Mafi, the number 8.
Yeah,
Adamanke Mafi, yeah.
Adamanke Mafi got the ball, and he straightened and got tackled. And I was like, oh no, he's blown it. Oh Jesus, they had four players outside. And I was getting really Irish, oh Jesus, at the time. And all of a sudden, this Polynesian arm came out of the tackle and offloaded, and it was a walk in from there. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. Because the way that game went, which people don't, you know, the story gets eulogized, they were getting blown away in that game, and South Africa kept switching off, and Japan kept coming back and scoring tries, and then South Africa would step up again and score. But it was like, you know, when your kid's on the street, next try wins. South Africa left it in that sort of precarious position. They scored a wonderful try off a scrum. There were two tries down, and they scored a wonderful backline move. Scored a fullback try off a set play off a 10-meter line out, which I was the touch judge for. Beautiful, beautiful rugby try. And then obviously scored the next try 5 minutes later. So the upset never really occurred to anyone until the last try happened, which was, and I have other stories that we'll leave for the autobiography after, by John de Villiers, and after the game being underneath the tunnel. It was an incredible scenes. But yeah, that Japan game was particularly an unbelievable highlight of my career. Yeah.
I love hearing that, because I had the opposite viewing experience of you. You were there. And I was, at the time, I think it might have been the last game I did, because I started on BT Sport not long afterwards, but I was the match announcer at Manchester City.
Oh, you were, weren't you?
And there was a game on, and so I was watching it on my phone while I was doing the work for Man City.
I was mildly concussed because the Carlisle second row absolutely lamped me. So that was good fun, though.
Wonderful memories. Just on the law changes, which JB, you mentioned, JP, you might have a view on those. The 50-22, the goal line dropout for held up over the line.
I think the 50-22 is endeavorous, and let's see how that goes. I'm not smart enough to know about that. But the 50-22, again, I'm not a very bright man. I don't really understand how that helps the game. It stops the Exeter pick and drive and all that. But what was great about Exeter was when these teams started saying, right, we're going to stop you, they left loads of space out wide. And yeah. Jack Noel and Short and all the Cuthbert and whoever else were scoring tries out wide because there was nobody out there. And I'm not the law of unintended consequence. It doesn't feel like that's perhaps the fairest outcome. I can understand 50-22, let's put the new law and let's take players out of the front line. But I'm not sure if you're a team who doesn't want to play rugby, does that help you with that law? And if you're a team that are playing rugby and you're on the goal line, is that law the look, we're a game that changes our laws very often, and we have to take a breath, look at it, see how it goes. And what's been great about rugby is if it hasn't worked, they've changed it back. So the clap small law being a good example. They brought that in for a while, realised that wasn't a brilliant idea, and then changed it back. So perhaps this is something that might
be around for a while. And there's also an element of fool's gold for it too, isn't there? Because you saw Bristol this weekend chasing that 50-22, and it just didn't work. And it, you know, if you're too determined to get it, you lose. What do I say? Don't let the tax tail wag the investment dog in the IFA world. Don't let the 50-22 tail wag the rugby dog. Carry on playing your actual game plan.
I think the most time the 50-22 will happen is a poor kick which just gets over halfway, which is returned immediately into the 22, which again is a great skill and ability, but I'm not sure it changes the dynamic of the game. I think the 22 from the goal line changes the dynamic of the game. I think it'll lead to more. Yeah, I'm not sure how it'll outcome, but it's not making me watch more rugby, that's for sure.
No, and I completely agree with you there. Yeah, more law changes. The law change I'd make is no more law changes for 10 years, no matter what.
Well, that's not a terrible idea. JP, you've had some terrible, terrible ideas.
I have not had a single terrible idea, not one.
Could a no-knock-on rule work?
Was it here?
I think what would be really interesting is if you knock on the ball and anyone from your team picks it up, it's an immediate penalty. I think that would, because in amateur rugby, you see when the ball's knocked on, everyone freezes and the other team always picks it up, and there's always a line break on the back of it. Now, it's very hard to compare amateur rugby with professional rugby, but I would say if you knock on the ball, the opposition get a free play at it. If you drop the ball and if you play at it at all, so a bit like, you know, the knock on offside, if you're ahead of the guy, teams now know need to leave it alone. So if you knock on the ball at all, it's a penalty, it's an immediate penalty. So everybody would be really careful. So you'd have much more changeover as possession, and you would have that unstructured play.
That would be
the one law I'd love to see. I think that would be a really interesting law.
I think that's really interesting. And what JP has done there, JB, is he's taken your bare bones idea, but he's put it in a form that actually might be palatable to rugby fans.
Do you know what? I actually think they've almost got to a point of no knock-ons now, which is as soon as the opposition team gets it, they wave it away as advantage over. And I think that's right, actually. What is the point of a scrum? The point of a scrum is to give opposition the ball. So if the opposition
So I've always
the scrum,
been the quickest to call advantage over, because I believe if you have control of the ball, it's the same as a scrum.
It's dropped down,
so
isn't it?
I'm not very good at refereeing scrums, so I'm going to call advantage over because the big guys scare me and I'm going to get away from that. So advantage over.
I like that. And I also, the one thing that you always have been particularly good at, exactly the advice is on the same point, the advantage, but it's times when they've got advantage, ball goes back to a 10, he does a kick that's really, but just a crap kick. Well, it's like, tough, you had the chance.
Yeah, exactly.
You had the opportunity.
Yeah.
You decided to use the advantage you had, and poor execution is not an excuse for
Yeah, it's, just the quality of the ball is all that's important.
Yes.
So I would say whether the team's under pressure or not. So if the scrum half's under pressure and he throws it to the guy under pressure, okay, if he spoons it, and that's where people get confused. Oh, this time he said this and this time. It's all about if you're under pressure or not, which goes back to referee prerogative. But that's the game we have. We can't have a grey game, which is black and white. We have to leave something in it. Leave something on the table for the dealer. You know, leave something for the ref.
Yeah, I completely agree. Right, I think we should put this into its own podcast.
No, I'm keeping JP. We need to have a Phil-like presence on the pod, JP. Otherwise, come on.
No, I'm very happy to come on. Anytime you guys want me to pop on, I'm doing feck all, so you're around.
I love that you're refereeing. What an absolute treat it must be for those guys at level 7 in Scotland. How have they responded?
They're giving me terrible shit. What are you talking about? Tell me I'm crap. Maybe they're right. Who knows? No, it's good crack and we have pints afterwards and we have good fun. You know, we just enjoy life. And, you know, what can I say? If they want me to referee higher, I'll referee higher. If they don't, I'll just do games. You know, I'm a rugby pig. You know, let's just enjoy life and not worry too much about, you know, what's done to who, when. Life's too short.
Well, we'll not take up any more of your NFL red zone, JP, or getting your stuff ready for lessons and stuff tomorrow.
Absolutely. And look,
we've got a lot of mats and games tomorrow. Yeah.
And you know, the offer's always there, JP. If you want to referee some decent rugby rather than that Scottish dross that you're doing, Tok H is always willing to have you.
I'd like to say you couldn't afford me, but like two beers and a pack of salt and crisps covers the match for me right now.
Perfect. All right, mate. Well, take care and I will chat with you soon.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
See you.
Bye. Top man, JP. What a guy.
Indeed. Isn't he just?
Isn't he just? Oh, and I feel the fill void has been filled as well. The fill-in is now complete. Yeah, there we go. No, Phil. But he will be back next week, hopefully. We'll have to get a shipping container. Shipping container would be the perfect thing for him to keep all his prep stuff in.
Yes, exactly.
All his rifles and tin foods. He could bury it underground.
Yeah, he's an odd man. An odd man. Sorry, it sounds a little bit like I'm not really.
Yeah,
with
what are
it.
You what are you looking for? As soon as JP left, JB got his phone out, and what are you doing?
Well, I'm trying to find. I'm not Googling David Duke because I don't want that on my.
You went from earlier when you were talking about the Worcester conditioning coach.
Yeah,
have you found out his name yet?
No, I haven't. I'm sure it's David. So that's what I was hoping I'd find it before the end of the. I can't believe how have I done this? How?
It's all right.
It's all right. It's not all right, though, is it?
It's all good.
It's not all right.
It's okay. It's fine. Right, I'm going to wrap up this
page. Been updated. What do you mean it's been updated? So Worcester don't even have their team page. Unbelievable. Senior squad, academy squad. That's it. Literally, this is Worcester's website. This is that's how they list their team.
Worcester's website is a PDF spreadsheet.
PDF
of a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
Oh, well. That's not very good for a team with the amazing academy Wi-Fi. It's just that's all their bandwidth is being taken up.
Must be.
With what's going on in the academy house. Right, I'm wrapping this up. We're contactedchasers@gmail.com if you want to email us. We are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at JB Moore if you want to go and catch up with JB's to and fro's with world-class referees on the minutiae of decisions or anything else, or on videos of Tok H tries. And Phil will be back next week. Thank you very much to JP Doyle. We'll definitely have to get him on again. And thank you for listening. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape.
And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.